This is Stateside. I'm Lester Graham. You know, sometimes words fail you, and I could not come up with a traditional summary of my next guest, so I guess I'll just let the title of her book tell you a little bit. Dirty Wars and Polished Silver, The Life and Times of a War Correspondent Turned Ambassadrix. Welcome, Linda Schuster.
Thank you very much.
It was a fascinating book. Let's start with your early life. You grew up in Detroit. How did that life, and I'm thinking mostly of your views of your mother's life, affect you?
When I was growing up in Detroit, I thought it was beyond boring. And back then, the motto on the Indiana license plates was wander, which I took as excellent advice for anyone raised in the region. It was sort of like grow up and leave. And rejecting my mom's life, which seemed beyond boring to me, was part requisite youthful rebellion and sort of part desire to see the world. And that desire was fueled in part by a stamp collection that I had as a kid, which piqued my interest in faraway places. So parents, be warned, keep those stamp collections away from your children. They can lead to all sorts of subversive ideas.
Well, the first chance you got as a teenager, you went to Israel at a particularly interesting time in its history. But first, tell us, what were you doing there?
I had worked in a bakery in suburban Detroit every afternoon and weekends during high school, and figured out that if I could just get there, I could live there and work and study. And so I basically ran away from home at age 17 after finishing high school and landed about 5 minutes later in the middle of the 1973 Yom Kippur War.
Right.
Yeah, it should have scared the daylights out of me, but instead it just whetted my appetite for adventure.
Yeah, I mean, that came out of nowhere. You didn't see it. I mean, you were picking apples one day, and the next day there are shells dropping around in tanks on the horizon. Well, tell me what you were feeling at that time.
Excited. It was, as I write in the book, as long as you're not dying, war is oddly exhilarating, or at least I thought so when I was 17.
It kind of created a path for you, but at the same time, you didn't plan to be a journalist, so how'd you end up being a reporter, becoming a reporter?
After the war ended and I had spent some time in Israel, I decided I did want to live abroad and I wanted a life adventure, but I wasn't quite sure how to achieve that. So I came back to the States and I went to the University of Michigan for my BA and sort of at the last minute decided I needed some sort of craft. I otherwise I couldn't support myself. So I did a master's of journalism at Michigan and then got very, very lucky because the Wall Street Journal hired me directly out of school. And when I went to New York to interview with the editors, they said, which of our many domestic bureaus are you interested in working in? And I said, oh, I never want to work domestically. I only want to work abroad. And they nodded understandingly and promptly dispatched me to their Dallas bureau, which for a New Yorker probably is foreign.
You eventually did become a war correspondent, but you really have to earn that title. Tell me about your first experiences.
Well, I got very, very lucky. So about a year after I landed in Dallas, for some reason, the Dallas bureau back then of the Journal was responsible for Central America. And so within a year of getting to Dallas, I was named their Central America correspondent, which at that time, this was the early 80s. This was one of the hottest stories in the world. And this is when the Reagan administration was becoming increasingly more involved in the wars down there.
You quickly found yourself in El Salvador. What happened there?
Actually, I found myself in Costa Rica first, and that's actually where I met my first husband, Dial Torgerson of the Los Angeles Times, who was a veteran foreign correspondent, and I had the very good fortune to meet him on, I think, the third day of my very first reporting trip abroad.
And you eventually became involved, as you said, he became your husband, but it was not a simple relationship. You were both on assignment in different places, and when you got together, it was really special. But war correspondent is a dangerous profession. What became of Dial?
Yeah, trying to arrange, I mean, we worked for different papers, we had very different audiences, we wrote very different sorts of stories. So trying to arrange getting together was obviously very difficult. So we could sort of snatch little weekends together in the various capitals of the countries we were covering. And we managed to squeeze in a wedding ceremony in Tegucigalpa, Honduras, in between assignments. And then 10 months later, he was in a car with a photographer on the Honduran-Nicaraguan border, and their car went over the landmine, and they were both killed instantly.
Can you give us any idea of how you were feeling at that time? You this was still new love to you.
Yeah. So, as someone put it, we were still in the keeping the bathroom door stage in our relationship. It was awful. And I was probably the last person on earth to find out about it. At that point, I had been named Mexico bureau chief for the journal. And I was in Mexico City on assignment when that happened. And by the time I found out, which was about 1 o'clock in the morning, the whole world knew. And I found out by the AP bureau chief in Mexico City calling me and telling me.
You continued as a journalist, as a war correspondent, but you eventually found yourself in the world of diplomats. How did that happen?
After Dial died, I mean, I still truly believed that journalism was a very noble calling and a really important profession. But increasingly, it became more difficult to sort of justify the kind of danger that I faced constantly. I mean, you see among foreign correspondents, a lot of them turn into what I call action junkies. They just can't. They become so addicted to the adrenaline rush of covering war that they can't do anything else. And you see a lot of broken marriages. You see a lot of alcoholism. And I just really didn't want that. And by the time I was in South Africa covering sort of the final throes of apartheid. And I had been very fortunate to meet an American diplomat and to fall in love again. And at that time, I was targeted by assassins in South Africa. And I have to say that covert war is just as scary as the stuff with bombs and bullets. And so the diplomat asked me to marry him. And I decided that I could give up the reporter's notepads for the little pillbox hats and white gloves of diplomacy, but still live a life of adventure and write about it.
How was that transition from war correspondent to spouse of a diplomat?
It was difficult. It sort of felt like one minute I was Lois Lane, this kind of steely-eyed girl reporter with the overnight bag at the ready by her bedside. And the next minute I was Mamie Eisenhower cross-pollinated with Princess Grace. It felt like a bit of a throwback. The State Department requires all of its ambassadors and their spouses to take a 2-week course that I called Ambassatrix School at the State Department. And it really felt like a throwback to the 1950s, because while our husbands, and back then all of the ambassadorial appointees were men, got these juicy briefings on their respective countries, we women were treated to lectures on such scintillating topics as your China patterns and you.
As it turns out, being a diplomat and being an ambassador, as your husband became, doesn't fulfill the deal that you had struck, and that is some safety instead of being in war-torn areas. But that didn't actually play out as you thought it might.
No, it didn't. When we moved, so he was ambassador to Mozambique in Southern Africa and then was ambassador to Peru. And when we got to Peru, our house had been blown up 4 times by terrorists. And any time we traveled outside the house, even just to get ice cream, we went in a 3-car bulletproof convoy that packed a small arsenal. We had 10 armed bodyguards anywhere we went. And not long after we got there, my husband was at a reception and at the house of the Japanese ambassador and left the reception just 30 minutes before guerrillas armed with submachine guns and rifles and tear gas and grenades attacked the house and took hundreds of guests hostage. And actually, this is the true life event on which Ann Patchett, the novelist, based her book Bel Canto.
I want to go back to your mother, because your view of her and her life changed through the years. At what point did you decide what she had was worth having for yourself?
Well, I completely surprise myself by waking up one morning at age 38 and deciding that I wanted to have a child. I never wanted to have a child. It seemed to smack so much of her life and to be so conventional. And I gave birth to our daughter in Peru, and that changed absolutely everything. And I think having gone through all that I went through and then having a child, I really began to value the things that she had valued growing up. But for a slow learner like me, it just took a few well-aimed rockets to get me there.
In the epilogue, you mentioned an event involving your daughter that, in a way, was repeating history for you. Can you tell us about that?
Yes. It's sort of the sins of the mothers visited on the daughters. Our daughter decided she was going to go off with her youth group to Israel one summer. And, of course, I had to say yes. And about 5 minutes after she got there, the Gaza war started. And the people who were escorting them around the country were moving the kids sort of all over Israel like little chess pieces, trying to get them out of the way of the rockets. And in fact, she was in a town that was hit by a rocket. And I guess the difference between when I was in Israel during the Yom Kippur War and when she was there during the Gaza War is that you had things like instant messaging, and so I could experience her fear in real time.
How's life for you these days?
It's great.
I mean, you live in Pittsburgh now. You write a lot.
It's wonderful. Pittsburgh is a great city. We've lived here now, for about 6 years. And as I obviously wrote this book, and I do a lot of freelancing, and I'm beginning to think of my next project, book writing project. But yeah, it's great not to be covering wars.
Linda Schuster is a former foreign correspondent for The Wall Street Journal and the Christian Science Monitor. And she later found her life immersed in the world of diplomats with her husband, who was ambassador in Mozambique and Peru. The book is called Dirty Wars and Polished Silver, The Life and Times of a War Correspondent Turned Ambassadrix. Thanks very much for talking with us.
It was my pleasure.
Linda Schuster will be at the Detroit Jewish Book Fair on Monday, November 6th at 2:30. That's at the Jewish Community Center of Metro Detroit.